you end up in a new country and you still have those worries and bad feelings, and then is it gonna be safe? I still have sort of phobia to take photos outside, you know, but I'm working on it. I want to, you know, because I love street photography, which caused lots of problems in Iran for me and for so many others.
Hi, and welcome to The Colour Cycle, a podcast that aims to disrupt cultural whitewashing and asks, do our arts and screens represent the real Australia? I'm Lena Nahlus from Diversity Arts Australia, or DARTS for short, an organisation that advocates for an arts and screen sector that looks like Australia. We'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional custodians of Australia from over 500 Indigenous nations and to pay our respects to their elders past and present. To me, this is a very important episode of The Colour Cycle. We've called it Making Art in Exile. We know that people are moving around the world and fleeing persecution, fleeing environmental disaster at a rate that's never happened before in history. Then there's a whole range of issues that you deal with inevitably wherever you resettle. It might be issues of language, of trauma, of having had huge breaks from education, finding employment, finding somewhere to live, making connections in communities. But how much more difficult must that be if you come from a refugee background and you come to Australia and you're an artist, and you're an artist who may not have any connections with the arts community and very likely will not have connections with the arts community locally? Well, today we're going to hear from a person who came to Australia as a refugee about his journey and how he's managed to practice his art and re-establish himself. We'll play our usual game of darts and give 5 stars to a person, group or cultural institution who's doing great things to promote cultural diversity. But first, what does it mean to be a refugee artist? And does this descriptor have to stick with you for the rest of your life? Are you a refugee artist or an artist from a refugee background? We facilitated a great debate about this very question at the 2016 APACA conference, and even though it was a few years ago, we thought it was such a great discussion that we wanted to share it with you again. I facilitated a panel with Jeeva Parthipan, Tanya Kanyas, Rani Pramesti and Osama Sami.
But very early on, I realised I'm not going to do narratives around being a refugee or displacement, because once you do that, then you can never make any other work again. And then I came to Australia about 6 years ago, and I've been working at a place called STARTS, as you mentioned.
And as a quick aside, STARTS stands for the New South Wales Service for the Treatment and Rehabilitation of Torture and Trauma Survivors. So they work a lot with refugees.
And while we do the odd work which talks about the narrative behind displacement, I think the best thing what we can do with any kind of refugee artist is that, you know, go beyond the narrative of that, because actually it's very limiting and it doesn't actually address sort of culture for its own sake sort of stuff. And I'm beginning to believe now, sort of, especially in this sphere, there's a lot of artist activists working along, and the artist activist seems to be part of the problem sort of a thing, because all they're interested in is sort of is the narrative behind it, and without actually development of any other kind of work.
Thank you for that, because I know that Osama has a very different experience. So for you, Osama, is it problematic for you to be called a refugee artist or an artist from a refugee background? Like, is there a danger that you won't have a career beyond?
No, I must respectfully disagree. I think what makes us is who we are our experiences. And I happen to be from that place. Of course, in an interview they said, oh, how do you feel as a Muslim Australian to have been nominated? There was the film got nominated for a Writers Guild Award. And I said, look, I don't wake up going to the shower going, I'm going to the shower as a Muslim now, and I'm going to apply my shampoo as a Muslim, and I'm going to condition my hair as a Muslim, and then catch a tram and touch on my key as a Muslim. I don't do that. I do that as a person, as me. However, my work is a different thing. My work is informed by my experiences and past. Martin Scorsese spent his early life making films about Italians. So I use those experiences, and of course, it creates a dialogue When I make something and I tell people about my experiences, it creates a dialogue. So, because on a tram, often people would say, you know, if I can go back where you came from, and that's cool, all right, I'll take your point, but it's a one-way thing. It's not a dialogue. So if he says, why don't you go back to where you come from, then I'll tell him why. And then it becomes a question. It becomes a two-way thing. So I think our work creates... Of course, you don't want to be pigeonholed because we're more than that. We're human beings, and the human endeavor and the human condition is all the same. We all love. You know, we have families and our duty and responsibility and all that. But I like when things are specific. That makes things universal, because when you attack something at the heart, then that's when it becomes universal, rather than trying to come from the broad. Like, I'll make a love story, but it's not going to do anything to do with a Muslim. I'll just do it as a, you know, and then it just, for me, it becomes wishy-washy. But if I do it, I tell a Muslim love story because I know it so well, people will just see it as a love story.
If I can chime in on that as well, I think it depends on what context you're in, and that's where the empowerment of that, the potentiality of that term can come from. So I agree that it does inform our very existence, and if anything, it is a way of being. It's an ontology. Whether we like it or not, it's going to inform every part of our being, our breathing, our practice, our art, our research. But in saying that, I think there is power in where we choose to use this term. So if you're based in what you would say your community, so I would say RISE, for example, I use that term. It is a term where you take it on and you walk with pride. And everyone has a different definition of what that multiplicity of refugee, asylum seeker means. But then if you're in, I guess, institutional white spaces, there's power in refusing to use that term. And in that refusal, you create a space still of dialogue, I would argue, in spaces like that. So it depends how and when you use that term.
Can I touch on that, actually? Because when I was approached for this panel, actually one of the first things I said to Lena was like, whoa, I feel really uncomfortable about being on that panel. And part of it is because of the relative economic privilege that my family come from, when we came into this country, I was privileged enough to immediately have an international student visa, you know, and international students are, you know, the cash cows of a lot of education institutions in Australia. So I never had to formally seek asylum. You know what I mean? That my legal status was never as asylum seeker. My legal status was never as refugee. And that label was never applied to me. The first label that was applied to me was Asian, and the second one, international student. So for me, my family's economic privilege meant that the label of refugee and asylum seeker was never applied to me. What do you reckon about that?
Yeah, I think, labels. Yeah, we've got to get rid of labels. It's like if I read a book, I don't care if it's written by a man or a woman, by a gay person or a straight person. If it's a good story, I'm going to get hooked.
And also kind of highlights a really good point about the diversity within that category of refugee artists or of refugee, that, you know, there's socioeconomic diversity, there's cultural, religious, all kinds of diversity. But
temporal,
I can see you've
well.
Got, you're bringing your microphone higher up, Jeeva.
So I think what you're really trying to say is, like, I mean, the refugee is a time-based sort of thing. You're it's for 3 years or 2 years in your life, really, as far as I'm concerned. It's not a lifelong badge you carry for the rest of your time. And most of the refugees are future Australians. That's as simple as that. And just get on with it, really, you know. And with a net, of course, you can't carry multiple layers within yourself. It's not tied into a nation state. I've lived in three continents plus in four other countries in my life. I carry all this experience, and all of that comes into my work. But it's a finite terminology, sort of, as far as, you know, in terms of the work I do, sort of a thing.
I think the issue arises when we are only expected to speak of that narrative.
Yeah. So that's what I was trying to get to before, the narrative behind the sort of, you know, where you have to tell that narrative all over again, and that's the only space that you're allowed to. And in the absence of generally sort of, you know, with a second, third generation Australians still having to recall their Vietnamese boat narrative, like my friend would say, sort of after she's of her second generation, and the only work she's allowed to ever give on stage is the Vietnamese boat narrative, then that's a problem.
And I would also argue that refugeeness, or the context of being in a state of refugeeness, is something that you carry even throughout generations. Because for me, the whole discourse around refugee and asylum seeker, who is, who isn't, is very much based on nation state ideas and colonial citizenship ideas of who is and isn't. So my argument is, yeah, that we carry that. And that's why I talk about contextual refugeeness as opposed to, I guess, a federal colonial definition of what it is and who can be a refugee in that sort of legal human rights sense of the word.
For some people, perhaps, that sense of being in exile never goes away.
Yeah, and that's why I find the research is looking around, looking at what are the expected staging of refugee and asylum seeker narratives within Australia. And I've found through the Lit Review and also just seeing a lot of performances is they're very much based on this binary of new and old country, citizen, non-citizen, traditional, contemporary. It doesn't really, you know, we're seeing bits and pieces of that changing now, but very few performances talk about the really complex nuances of what it is to actually navigate that in an Australian context. And so my argument is that, and this is something that also an academic called Alison Jeffers, she speaks about how refugee and asylum seeker narratives are actually to change the awareness of the host nation as opposed to something that is for the community itself as a self-determining and, you know, autonomous process in and of itself.
Photographer and visual artist Damon Am fled Iran and came to Australia by boat. He spent time in detention at Christmas Island and since then has been slowly rebuilding his life and his artistic practices. We spoke to him at the Settlement Services International offices in Ashfield.
Thank you, Damon. Thank you so much for your time today, for coming here and participating.
No problem at all. My pleasure.
So we wanted to really do an episode to have a better understanding about what it's like to come to Australia from a refugee background and be an artist and actually be able to participate in the arts sector. So how would you describe your art?
Mainly what I do is like two different forms at the moment. Part of it is directly from my photography. So I use my photos as a base of my artwork.
Okay.
Then I start to work on it digitally to add layers, colors, and patterns and other things. So I'll transfer it to a kind of new area of artwork. And, you know, I had a fast food shop in Iran, which is, this part is amazing too. I had it for around 2 years, and a first kind of abstract painting started when I was working in my own fast food shop. So they were like metal plates to make the pizza in oven. So I just started to bring out some textures from the pizza plates. And then that was my main series of kind of abstract painting photography work, which I called it Italian pizza and the Milky Way. So because it transfers you to a Milky Way, you see those patterns and textures come from pizza plates, but you just straight ahead, you travel to cosmos and to kind of galaxy. So that's why the title was Italian pizza and the Milky Way.
So even when you're owning a pizza shop,
yeah,
you're still kind of making art from, you know, the designs that,
yeah,
you see on the pizza trays and,
exactly,
and designs that kind of transport you to another place and let you imagine alternative universes and,
yes,
realities. I like that. That's really cool. And did you exhibit as well when you were in Iran? Did you?
Yeah, I've exhibited a few times, but, you know, it's like, unfortunately, Iran, which is one of the lands of and cradles of art in the world, but unfortunately at the moment is running by a kind of repressive Islamic regime, which they, it's like, you know, when it goes to a kind of religious or political or kind of anything that regime thinks it's against them, so they come after you and then you're in trouble. So many kind of censorships, and so many artists, they are in prison and because of only their art. So art can be a source of your crime. It's like some of artists, they are criminal because they are against the regime, or they have some political opinions or anything against the religion, and so they're in big trouble. So
what I've heard a lot over the years about artists who come here, not just artists from refugee backgrounds, although I imagine it's even harder for people from refugee backgrounds, but first generation artists, is that it's actually really hard to kind of get involved in the arts and creative sector in Australia, that there are a lot of barriers. Yes. And I just wondered if you can think about your time in Iran and now your time in Australia, what are the differences in terms of you being able to participate, and what were some of the difficulties for when you arrived?
Yeah. One of the main difficulties is losing your connections. It's like, I had kind of big connections in Iran. Most of my friends and, my artist friends and, the ones that we, research art and we created art and we shared our art, and also all those people. So it's like you come to a land which you know no one. So I had to kind of start from scratch, from zero, to create and to kind of make my connections,
When you were starting that process here again, so you kind of start from scratch in a sense, how did you navigate? How did you know who to speak to, where to go? What were some of the, the barriers to making those connections?
Yeah. There's so many barriers. It's like, the reasons that you leave your land, your motherland, and part of it can be art, which some artists, they fleeing their country because of being artists. So first thing you carry with yourself is a trauma and a kind of hard mental issues that you had, and then you have to work on it. So it's like then you end up in a new country and you still have those worries and bad feelings, and then you need to, you need to analyze and track yourself and to work out that is it gonna be safe, it's not, or I still have sort of phobia to take photos outside, but I'm working on it because I love street photography. One of the first feelings that happened in me, it was street photography, which caused lots of problems in Iran for me and for so many others.
Was it illegal?
Yeah, it's mainly illegal because it's like different powers that come after you. Depends on their point of view. It's like, and also other hard things is that you come here, it's like I came by boat and I was sent to detention centers. So it's like for years and years, camera is part of me, part of my soul, part of my body, part of my emotions. And when I don't have camera, so it's like I'm kind of addicted person that I don't have drugs. So I ended, it's like, and in detention center, it's like, obviously you cannot have a camera. So those feelings start to hurt you that you cannot, it's like, even during the journey, I wanted to capture the journey that what is happening to people fleeing their country and seeking asylum in other countries. And but, you know, I still have those frames in my head, but unfortunately I didn't have camera in the journey, and also after that in detention center. So part of my kind of main stories that I want to share with people, it's gone, and I can make it in kind of another format of art, and I'm thinking about it. It's about, you know, making films and also some kind of conceptual art which gives a bit of those senses and feelings to people.
So some of the barriers were, you know, I think really important to kind of understand. And I guess being in a detention center and not having access to making art, which was so, and all the other trauma that's inflicted upon people who have not just had to flee, but also, you know, kind of had to spend time in the detention centres would... Okay, so I want to also understand the barriers in terms of the arts sector in Australia that you encountered. And I know that connections is definitely a big one, but where did you go, you know, or what did you do to try and exhibit or make those connections, and what were some of the things that prevented you from being able to do your art? Because you were saying to me earlier, connect to me. So, and you've been here for 4 years and you're still feeling that way, that you need those, you know, those connections. I know 4 years isn't a long time.
It started when I was in detention center. First I was in Christmas Island, then I was sent to Kerteyn. In that detention center we had an art class, and I started to attend there, and I met an artist that she was running those classes, and Donna, one of the amazing Australian painters. So I started to talk to her and release and express my feelings, and she was amazing the way that she listened to me, and then the way that she guided me and then talked to me. And she was, you know, I never forget her support and her kind of, you know, sympathy that she felt. And so that class was my, you know, sort of fantasy land and happy land. So every day I went to that art class and met her and met all the asylum seekers there. They were creating art there, and it was amazing. And then it was not enough, and I asked her to, you know, to let me assist her to do other things. So, because I love, and then I started to create some paintings there. So it was like back into my childhood with some, you know, there were some canvas and paints and brushes, everything. So I started to express myself, and unfortunately, the teacher, left the detention center, and then the day after that I went there and she was not there and the class was empty, I was like sort of, I got some, you know, depression back. But luckily that I was released after a short time after that to communities, to, you know, Queensland. Then I made my journey to Sydney. Then I sort of found her, you know, and she helped me a lot. She told me the names of galleries, and also in the beginning she took me to some of those galleries, and which I really loved it. And I felt that, you know, I that feeling was amazing, that someone, you know, in a new land that you know no one, someone is caring that much to you and pay attention to your feelings. So I owe her a lot, you know, and I deeply appreciate her.
It's so important. It just, you know, makes you realize, like, even just that, just one connection, how that can help you to feel connected and introduce you to the landscape and, you know, the industry. And it's as simple as that. And you told me you're going to TAFE. There's a lot of things that you're doing. You're doing this Ignite Small Business Startup Program.
Yes.
You're also studying art at TAFE.
Yes.
And you also exhibit and make work. Where have you exhibited here? And, you know, where have you done your photography work? Have you been engaged as a photographer or have you worked?
Yeah, photography for me has two sides. So one side is commercial to make money with, and then one side is art to spend money. So I make money with commercial, which I barely make money. So, and I exhibit as well. And the main start happened by SSI support. So in the beginning, I asked my caseworker to help me to find, you know, art communities and kind of connection. And she straight ahead introduced Carolina to me, which is our art coordinator in SSI. So, you know, in 2014, we had our first workshop sessions, and then I showed two of my works in a gallery in University of Sydney, Verge Gallery.
Verge, yeah. And I should say SSI stands for Settlement Services International.
Yes.
And you were saying that they gave you your first kind of break in a way in the industry in 2014. They ran a program.
Yes.
And then you exhibited in Verge Gallery at Sydney University.
Yes. And after that, I felt like much more connected. I really got positive feelings that I can make it here, especially those first two art pieces were purchased. And so I just felt that, you know, it's like it's going to happen. I can make it here. And they helped me after that as well for other exhibitions. And part of SSI is Ignite, which they helped me for, you know, to developing my career and to run my small sole trade business as a photographer, which I'm doing at the moment. I'm established as a kind of event photographer, but I'm not that busy. I barely get some shoots, and so the photo shoots help me a bit, but you know, I need to work on it more. I need to, you know, advertise myself more and so people know me. I met an amazing artist, Jenny. She's a sculptor and also a photographer. Then I shared my story with her, and I found out how much things in common we have about our art. So, and then finally happened in 2016, we both exhibited our work for the festival in a Stirrup Gallery in Marrickville, which it was amazing, and that's one of my greatest achievements in art. And I really, you know, I owe her a lot because she helped me a lot to, you know, for that, and also because of my some technical language barriers, and she helped me for that as well. So yeah, so it's like so far I've been lucky and for finding and having these amazing people around me.
And I'm sure they've been lucky to have met you. You've probably influenced their practice and the way that they work. There wasn't something I forgot to ask. Was language a barrier at all when you came to Australia?
I've studied English before in some institutes in Iran.
I suspected.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd ask because I know for a lot of people language is a barrier.
Yeah, but you definitely cannot be native kind of, you know, speaker in your life when you are from, you know, coming from a kind of another language. So it's like it's really hard to, especially the difference of accents. Because Australian accent is a bit different, and also so many slangs and words. It's like language is like an ocean. You cannot, you know, end it. It's like you go in it and you sink. It's like it's not going to finish, and you cannot say I'm a kind of fluent or kind of, you know, native speaker, because it's not going to happen.
Well, you said you wanted to make film about your journey. You're interested in using other mediums now and to kind of express some of those stories that you've experienced. But when you made the work, for example, your first exhibition here at Verge Gallery, what was the work about? What were the themes that you were touching on?
That was sort of abstract work, because first I really I couldn't trust, and I still had that kind of fear. And so those were two abstract pieces. And so the title was a bit political, which was Cast Away in the Caspian Sea, created by a piece of kind of exploded boat in Caspian Sea, which big part of it was for Iran, and now it's big part of it is gone and it's for Russia. So yeah, the title told more than the essence of the work to the audience, which no one asked me, but I'm just saying because you asked me now.
Powerful. But, that's powerful. And what about other exhibitions or other work that you've done?
I've done some exhibitions here. I've showed my works in galleries in New South Wales and also Victoria and also England, London, and I've shown different styles and different moods, actually. Some of them, they were kind of philosophic, some of them political, some of them abstract.
You know, what I'm really understanding from what you're saying is that, you know, you make work about all the different aspects of your life, and it isn't necessarily just about one mood or one area, but you're actually capturing different themes and different... Am I getting that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or is that too literal?
You know, that's correct. Because, you know, a big part of me is my worries and my concern is about my country and my countrymen. Because I am aware of those people, especially artists, who are suffering and who are in a kind of terrible situations with just creating their arts. They are musicians that they are in prison and they are sentenced to death. And they are artists that they are in prison and they are sentenced to years of jail and some of them sentenced to death. So it's not a joke, it's about humans' life. Mm. People are losing their life because of their artists and they are whatever, filmmaker or kind of journalist. Or it's like, you know, those kind of repressive systems, which is not only in Iran, it's like in so many countries. So part of me is the voice I have behalf of my countrymen as well, and it's not all about me, because one of the exhibitions I dedicated my work, one of my works, that work in that exhibition, to Athena Farghdani, one of the cartoonists and painters that she was sentenced for 13 years in jail for just creating an art and like painting and drawing the parliament in a political way. And then it was a kind of worldwide protest against that kind of cruel and unfair and injustice. So, and it happened. We finally made it. She got out after 18 months instead of 13 years. So it's very important. It's people that are still in prison and those scary prisons. You know, people have to censor themselves. People have to shut up. People have to, you know, obey whatever system says. So it's like it's a kind of serious issue for people and especially artist people.
Yeah. You've talked about needing brokers in a way, people to kind of connect you locally. Mm-hmm. But and you're getting support from SSI, like business support, but what are the kinds of support that you would benefit people who come here? Like you, people who come here from refugee backgrounds or who already have art forms established in the countries they come from?
One of the ways is, you know, what artists mainly suffer from is part of it is politically, part of it is financially. So I'll tell you, it's like part of me is that the voice I am and I cannot shut up. I just prefer to speak. Part of it is financially. It's like, you know, artists are usually terrible about marketing, about making money. So I'm terrible at making money. I'm good at creating art. So if there are any links, if there are any organizations, if there are any people that they can support this part, which, you know, it's like I'm studying full-time now. I'm thinking about future, not only myself, about this country. I owe this country, I owe these people. I want to teach the children of this, you know, this nation and Australia. So for me, I'm seeing long term.
Okay, and you want to become a teacher?
I wanted to study photography. A part of it is because of my technical language barriers. I want to hear them all in English so I can teach children in future in English. Because I love teaching and I love teaching art and I love it to happen in my life.
Oh, wow, that's exciting. That's a good way to end, I suppose. I just wanted to say thank you so much.
You've been You're welcome.
So generous for just sharing.
My pleasure.
Sharing so much. Thanks, Damon.
Cheers.
That was Damon Amb, and thank you to Settlement Services International for letting us use your offices as a recording studio. Let's play darts. In this regular segment of our podcast, we ask an artist three quick questions and see if their answers hit the dartboard. Today's lucky contestant is...
My name is Zainab Sayed, and I'm a performance poet and a producer in Western Australia.
What's the biggest obstacle to change?
We're not listening enough.
What's one strategy to affect change?
To interrogate our intentions.
And what does the future look like if it's going to be more culturally diverse in the arts?
It looks like not one person carrying the responsibility of representing an entire population, whatever that population is.
We want to acknowledge those places in the creative sector where great things are happening in the arts, and that's why we have our 5 Gold Star Awards every episode. And this week's winner is the Refugee Art Project, which was set up by a collective of academics and artists who share a commitment to asylum seekers and refugees coming to Australia who were in detention. Since its establishment in 2010, more than 500 artworks have been exhibited across Australia. The Refugee Art Project is passionate about showcasing the enormous talent locked away beyond the razor wire. If you want to nominate someone or yourself for a 5-star award, please send us an email to info@diversityarts.org.au. We'd love your suggestions. That's all for this episode of the Colour Cycle podcast made by Diversity Arts Australia, an organisation committed to an arts and screen sector that looks like the real Australia. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts and go to our website, diversityarts.org.au, where you can hear earlier episodes or watch videos about our work. Leave a comment on our Facebook page or record a message on your phone and email it to us. The email address again is info@diversityarts.org.au. And to see more of Damon's work, and thank you so much, Damon, go to damonartstudio.com. That's damonartstudio.com. We'd like to acknowledge the support for this podcast from Create New South Wales and the Australia Council for the Arts, and to thank our partners at Casula Powerhouse Arts Centre. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy from Audiocraft. Thank you, Jennifer. Our opening and closing music is by Tarek Sawires. Thank you also to Terumi Narashima and Paul Macy for additional music. I'm Lina Nahlus. Thanks for listening, and Masalemi. Yalla, goodbye.